Hey Siri, play Grit Northwest.
Okay, Grit NW, a Carpenters Union podcast coming up.
Welcome to another episode of Grit Northwest. I'm Joe Cadwell, president of the Northwest Carpenters Union, writer, producer, and your host of this podcast. The goal of Grit Northwest is to introduce you to the various trades, personalities, and issues relevant to the construction industry in our region. Through informative and insightful interviews, I hope to enable you to develop a stronger understanding of what it means to be a member of the Carpenters Union and show you how you can become a proud guardian of the deep and rich legacy that those who came before us worked so hard to build.
Happy day after Thanksgiving, everyone. I hope you all had an enjoyable time socially distancing from your friends, family members, and loved ones this year over a piping hot Zoom virtual teleconference turkey dinner. The reality is, if you're anything like me, you're probably still in a food coma and not wanting to do much of anything. That's why I decided to serve up some reheated leftovers from past episodes for today's show. We'll hear highlights from some of your favorite segments, as well as something entirely new, special courtesy of Radio Labor and Mark Bellinger, the international labor educator based in Canada. Additionally, I am happy to announce that Grit Northwest is now a proud member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. This coalition of passionate, labor-centric podcast and radio hosts strive to educate and empower their listeners through intelligent, insightful conversation and storytelling. I look forward to sharing more about this group's mission and message in future episodes. And before we start today, I would like to mention there is a special drawing for listeners of this episode. Check the show notes for more details on how you can win. First on the menu today, we have Mark McDermott. We spoke with Mark previously in Grit episode number 4. Mark is a nationally recognized public speaker and lifelong workers' rights activist and has quite a story to tell. Give it a listen.
And I'm a direct beneficiary of the civil rights movement. And that realization when I was 20 years old really changed the direction of my life. And that I understood is that don't fall into this racist trap. Don't listen to people talking about hating other people. Find our common ground, and if we work together, we can make things better for all of us. So that was lesson number one, and that set me off on a life of activism, and both out in the community, but also in the labor movement. And the second story is I'm in my early 30s. I'm a working machinist. I'm in a heavy manufacturing plant in suburban Seattle. I'm on the executive board of my 4,000-member machinist local, and life is good. I'm building a pension. I'm saving money to buy a house. I got good medical, good dental, good wages. Life is good. And one day I went to work on a Friday morning, and out of the blue, there's an announcement over the PA system in the plant that we were supposed to put down our tools and assemble in the largest room in the plant. This was extremely unusual. So we all put our tools down. We troop into this room, and here's the owner, and there's some suits, guys wearing suits. And the owner then announces that he sold a company, and one of the conditions of the sale is that we're all terminated as of 3:30. This is like dropping an economic bomb on us. Well, an argument broke out, and since I was the top union official, I was still on the tools, but in the plant, in the ensuing argument, I was asking, well, are the new owners going to recognize the union? And it became pretty clear that they were going to try and get rid of us. So long story short, by the end of the day, all of us had been fired. We'd been marched out into the parking lot with our toolboxes. And the fight was on to save our union and hopefully get our jobs back. I was never rehired. Our union was broken. I spent 15 months out of work. I exhausted my unemployment benefits. I lost my medical, my dental, my vision, all of the benefits that I got that the union had negotiated because I hadn't worked in such a long time. I ran out of unemployment benefits. I had to move in with friends because I couldn't pay the bills. And I didn't buy a house because nobody was going to loan money to somebody who'd been out of work. Well, it took 15 months for me to find another job. I left the trade. I lost 6 years on a pension. And I swore that day I would never shut up and never stop fighting for organized labor and working people until I'm dead.
Next up is Lisa Marks, member of the Local 70 in the North Puget Sound area, who we met in Episode 6, Women in the Trades.
A bunch of how-tos, tricks and tips and all that kind of stuff. It just builds your confidence. And then that way, when you get on the job site, it's not quite as scary of a place and you feel like you can compete. There's also lack of role models. That's why it's really nice to have these sisters groups and see so many sisters starting to get involved in volunteering and stuff, because women got to see it to be it. And if you don't have a role model, an example, another sister who's especially in leadership or other areas, it's really hard to see yourself there. And so it's really nice to see more women role models coming out. There's, of course, the discrimination and being passed over for promotion. Sometimes as women, we can try and try and try. And sometimes, you know, we try too hard and can get perceived wrong. And sometimes, you know, I mean, it just seems like even if we have the same qualifications, and maybe even if we exceed qualifications for a promotion, sometimes we're looked over. And I'd say that's kind of a big one.
Council Representatives David Hom and Melvin Norman spoke with us recently in episode 4 of The Spotlight when they told us about this year's holiday toy drive.
So, David, I understand our council had a hand in starting a nonprofit for this. What can you tell our listeners about that?
That culminated about 3 years ago in our EST, Evelyn Shapiro, authorizing the regional council to form a 501c3 independent nonprofit organization and expand the toy drive to the state of Washington. This is a huge undertaking and has tripled the size, the amount, and the members and children in need and the funds needed to accomplish this huge task. So I'm very excited for the future. It's been a blessing to see the happiness that this is bringing to our membership and their children. And I'm really excited to see where this goes and how we can expand it to more members and help more folks in need.
Well, geez, David, that sounds like a whole lot of outreach and a whole lot of giving. Just going to take a quick break in the action for a message from the Northwest Carpenters Union, who is encouraging you to visit local family-owned stores and businesses when you're doing your holiday shopping. Saturday, November 28th is Small Business Saturday. Sandwiched between Black Friday sales from the big box stores and e-commerce Cyber Monday promotions, it's Small Business Saturday. Now, more than ever, our seasonal spending dollars are needed to help keep independent local merchants strong and healthy through these tough economic times. So this holiday season, be sure to frequent those businesses in your community now and for the future. And now, back to the show. Melvin, do the toys, do they just go to our Carpenters Union and our members, or are they going out to the community in large?
That's a good question. So basically, no, it doesn't. We give toys out to our members. We donate toys to toy and joy makers, labor community services, Dornbecker's. So it goes out to a lot of different identities that we have leftover toys to share. And I want to bring up where we get the donations from. We get a monetary donation from our locals, local 30, 41, 129, 146, 271, 196, 18, 16, and 1503. Without those donations, you know, we wouldn't go forward with this.
All right. And how many families do you think get received toys?
Average, we did last year, we did over 216. So that's roughly around 500 and some kids that we donate toys to.
Daniel Del Real, president of the Local 146, enlightened us as to what our council reps do on a daily basis during the check-ins episode number 2. Dude, where's our reps?
To put some actual physical numbers on it, this is crazy. Oregon and Southwest Washington, we have 21 representatives. And for those 21 representatives, we cover 111,000 square miles between Oregon and Southwest Washington. And to put the rest of the council in perspective, our entire 6-state council, we cover 1.1 million square miles of area with around a UBC staff of around 90 people. So we stay pretty busy all over the council in all 6 states, making sure that we're doing as much as we can for our members.
Get to Know a Local Better episode 1 introduced us to Josh Bolton, president of the Fightin' 1243 from Fairbanks, Alaska. Josh shared with us some uniquely Alaskan job site safety concerns.
And I know a lot of our members would probably wonder, you know, what are some of the crazier things you see up there on your job sites? Are there moose, caribou walking through your job sites occasionally?
Occasionally, yeah. It's moose especially. We even get them here at the training center. You know, we can be outside working on a project and have to bring everybody in because there's a moose in the yard. So
wow, and so people usually think that, you know, grizzly bears are a dangerous species to watch out for, but you're saying moose?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they're large animals and they move pretty quick.
Veterans in the Brotherhood organizer Dale Dvorak voiced his thoughts on why carpenters with prior military service do so well in the construction industry in episode 3 of The Spotlight.
And in your opinion, Dale, what do you think are some of the attributes that someone who has had prior military service, whether in the Marines, the Navy, the Army, the Coast Guard, the Air Force, National Guard?
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor.
Strength and honor.
What makes them successful when they transition out of the military and into our organization?
You know, I honestly, for the military, it's almost like a perfect fit. We have a structure, show up on time, discipline. You know, it's things that people don't really think about that, you know, people in the military, and you know as well as I do, Joe, that they spend a lot of money on us through training, through boot camp, through the discipline. And that's why it's always unfortunate that people get stuck in paying jobs that pay nothing. In fact, I just talked to a veteran yesterday. He's making like $17 an hour. And it's like, why? But if you don't know, you don't know. And these good paying jobs that we have, they don't even know about them. So with all the money that they spent on them, they spent on me and you, it's a perfect fit for the discipline. And some of the training doesn't, you wouldn't think it would cross train. Some of it cross trains very well, because in the military, you have welders. You have all kinds of different services within the military. So some of them cross train, they fit right over. Like the Navy, a good example for the Seabees. And Seabees fit right over in the construction. We actually bring them in. Shane Simon is one of our Navy veteran Seabees. And he came in. He didn't even have, I think he started a later term apprentice. He was perfect fit.
I have to agree. Well. Yeah, I was going to say, I have to agree. Having come to our organization, after having gone through Navy second class dive school in 1985, it was a smooth transition for me to take the skills that I had learned as a Navy diver and apply them to a successful career here in the Pacific Northwest as a commercial diver. So I truly appreciate that opportunity I was given early on in my life right out of high school to join the military.
So why can't we Zoom into our union meetings? Was the question posed to Ryan Hike from the Northwest Carpenters Union and a member of Local 196 in episode 1 of The Check-In. Check it out.
And AZ asked, why we don't use Zoom to hold our monthly meetings? Why is that?
That's a really good question, Joe. And I would say the main reason why we can't at this time is due to security. So there are some locals that are hosting virtual informational meetings. So at these informational meetings, there is no business conducted. It's strictly reporting, which is great, but we lose the business part of our meetings. So we do have some locals, such as mine, Local 196. We cover 5 states, which is a large territory. So early on, several years ago, we asked the UBC for dispensation, which is a fancy word for permission, from the UBC to have satellite locations, which would be an extension of our actual union hall, which is in Fife. So we had several different satellite locations that we would broadcast our meeting to, and members can vote and participate just as they would if they were in person there in Fife. So that's been working pretty well for us and other locals as well. But now that we have the very restricted, you know, regulations and guidelines on gatherings, we really can't even do that effectively now. So, for example, Local 1503 out of Oregon City, they asked for dispensation by the UBC to have Zoom-type regular union meetings. And, you know, Zoom's really nice because if you set it up as a webinar, you can send the invite out to your membership. Your membership then registers to attend, so you can verify who is attending. You can vote, you can make motions, you can do everything that you would be able to do in person. So I understand that they are getting dispensation to be able to hold that format. I don't know that they've received anything official yet from the UBC, but myself and other local union leaders are anxious to see what that says, you know, what the UBC says that they can do, because I think that that's going to be a way of the future, and several other locals are going to apply for that permission to be able to hold their local meetings like that as well. So hopefully that answers your question, Joe. That was a really good one.
And now to finish things up, we have a special gift from our neighbors to the north, courtesy of Radio Labor.
This is Solidarity News on Radio Labor.
This is a Radio Labor report recorded on Wednesday, November 25th, 2020. I'm Mark Boulanger.
Why do big corporations continue to win while workers get shafted? It all comes down to power. Who has it and who doesn't?
One of the promises the Biden campaign made during the recent U.S. elections is to re-energize unions in the country. That, predicts University of California professor Robert Reich, will not be easy. But much can be done, he says in a new video. And he should know. He was the Secretary of Labor during the first Clinton administration.
Big corporations have become so dominant that workers and consumers have fewer options and have to accept the wages and prices these giant corporations offer. This has become even worse now that thousands of small businesses have had to close as a result of the pandemic, while mammoth corporations are being bailed out. At the same time, worker bargaining power has declined as fewer workers are unionized, and technologies have made outsourcing easy, allowing corporations to get the labor they need for cheap. These two changes in bargaining power didn't happen by accident. As corporations have gained power, they've been able to gut anti-monopoly laws, allowing them to grow even more dominant. At the same time, fewer workers have joined unions because corporations have undermined the nation's labor laws, and many state legislatures, under intense corporate lobbying, have enacted laws making it harder to form unions. Because of these deliberate power shifts, even before the pandemic, a steadily larger portion of corporate revenues have been siphoned off to profits and a shrinking portion allocated to wages. Once the economy tanked, the stock market retained much of its value, while millions of workers lost jobs and the unemployment rate soared to Great Depression-era levels. Meanwhile, as unions have shrunk, so too has their political power. In 2009, even with a Democratic president and Democrats in control of Congress, unions could not muster enough votes to enact a simple reform that would have made it easier for workplaces to unionize. All the while, corporations have been getting states to enact so-called right-to-work laws, barring unions from requiring dues from workers they represent. Since worker representation costs money, these laws effectively gut the unions by not requiring workers to pay dues. In 2018, the Supreme Court, in an opinion delivered by the court's five Republican appointees, extended right to work to public employees. This great shift in bargaining power from workers to corporate shareholders has created an increasingly angry working class, vulnerable to demagogues peddling authoritarianism, racism, and xenophobia. Trump took full advantage. All of this has pushed a larger portion of national income into profits and a lower portion into wages than at any time since World War II. That's true even during a severe downturn. For the last decade, most profits have been going into stock buybacks and higher executive pay rather than new investment. So what can be done to restore bargaining power to workers and narrow the widening gap between corporate profits and wages? For one, make stock buybacks illegal, as they were before the Securities and Exchange Commission legalized them under Ronald Reagan. This would prevent corporate juggernauts from siphoning profits into buybacks and instead direct profits toward economic investment. Another solution, enact a national ban on right-to-work laws, thereby restoring power to unions and the workers they represent. Require greater worker representation on corporate boards, as Germany has done through its employee co-determination system. This is all about power. The good news is that rebalancing the power of workers and corporations can create an economy and a democracy that works for all, not just a privileged few.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show. If so, be sure to share it with friends, family members, and coworkers. And if you're really enjoying Grit Northwest, please consider joining the Grit Nation by clicking on the hyperlink in the show notes. You'll be kept up to date on special offers and promotions only available to members, and you'll be entered to win an official I've Got Grit t-shirt when you do. Well, that wraps up this edition of Grit Northwest. Till next time, this is Joe Cadwell reminding you to work safe, work smart, and stay union strong.